Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
If former President Trump is convicted in a court of law, would you still support him as your party's choice? Please raise your hand if you would.
Republican presidential candidates faced off in their first debate Wednesday night, but frontrunner Donald Trump refused to take part. Later today, he'll turn himself in at the Fulton County Jail to face charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. We'll air excerpts of the Republican debate in Milwaukee.
First on the stage, who isn't bought and paid for, so I can say this. The climate change agenda is a hoax. The climate change agenda is a hoax. And we have to declare independence.
Now is not the time for on-the-job training. We don't need to bring in a rookie. We don't need to bring in people without experience.
But first, the head of the Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has apparently died in a plane crash in Russia 2 months after he led a failed mutiny against Putin. We'll get the latest as questions swirl over what happened. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Officials in Russia say the mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin was among 10 people killed Wednesday when a private jet crashed northwest of Moscow. The crash also reportedly killed Dmitry Utkin, senior mercenary commander who founded the Wagner Group in 2014. Eyewitnesses to the crash reported hearing two bangs before the plane tumbled from the sky, an incident that was apparently captured in a video widely circulated on social media. The crash sparked widespread speculation. Prigozhin and other Wagner leaders were assassinated for leading a failed mutiny in June that saw heavily armed mercenaries advance to within 120 miles of Moscow. Adding to the speculation, Russian media reported Wednesday the Kremlin has fired senior Russian General Sergei Surovikin as Air Force chief. The general was known as an ally of the Wagner Group, close to Prigozhin, and had not been seen in public since the mutiny. We'll have the latest on this story after headlines. Three U.S. senators have pledged additional military support to Ukraine during a visit to Kyiv. On Wednesday, Democratic Senators Richard Blumenthal and Elizabeth Warren and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, voicing their support for President Biden's request this month that Congress approve an additional $13 billion in military aid and $8 billion in humanitarian aid to Ukraine this year.
To the media reports saying this is a stalemate, you are wrong. They breached a major line of defense yesterday.
We're here to say, in a bipartisan way, we want to help them. We want to make sure they have the resources they need to be able to fight back against Vladimir Putin.
Senators Warren and Graham. The Biden administration has approved the sale of an additional $500 million in military hardware to Taiwan. The main contractor for the deal would be U.S. arms maker Lockheed Martin, which builds F-16 fighter jets used by Taiwan's military. This comes just weeks after the U.S. approved a weapons aid package to Taiwan worth up to $345 million. In recent months, China's military has increased its activities around Taiwan, sending fighter jets and warships closer to the island, which Beijing considers part of its sovereign territory. Six new countries will join the BRICS alliance, adding to the bloc of nations led by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Starting January 1st, BRICS will be expanded to include Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. The announcement came as BRICS members wrapped up a three-day summit in South Africa. On Wednesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping blasted what he called a Cold War mentality haunting international politics. The remarks came a day after Xi unexpectedly skipped a major address in Johannesburg, fueling speculation over his health. The speech was instead delivered by Chinese Commerce Minister Wang Wentao.
All that we have done in the final analysis is to enable our people to lead a prosperous life. However, some countries, unwilling to give up their hegemonic position, have arbitrarily blocked and suppressed emerging market countries and developing countries, curbing whoever is developing well and tripping up whoever is catching up.
On Wednesday, hundreds of environmental and human rights activists gathered outside the BRICS summit demanding China halt financing for fossil fuel projects in Africa. Protesters cited the China-backed East African crude oil pipeline project known as ECOP. Campaigner and protest leader Zaki Mamdu said a true friend to Africa would not fund projects that displace communities, unravel livelihoods, and destroy ecosystems.
What friend would come into your house and remove you from your house and take your land, kill your crops, and subject your children to illness and harm?
Yes.
That is a bad friend. That's a bad friend. These ones of China, of Russia, of India, they aspire to be the same colonial extractors.
Officials in Turkey have suspended ship traffic in the Turkish Straits linking the Black Sea to the Mediterranean. After wildfires broke out in the region, hundreds of ships were left idled as officials closed the Dardanelles Strait to clear the area for firefighting planes. In neighboring Greece, firefighters are battling more than 350 wildfires that have broken out over the past week, including fires that scorched homes just outside the capital, Athens. Here in the United States, a record-shattering summer heat wave continued Wednesday with more than 130 million people in 22 states under heat alerts. In the Pacific Northwest, the death toll from wildfires in eastern Washington state has risen to 2. Farther north, officials in British Columbia have lifted travel restrictions after rain and cooler weather helped bring wildfires under control. British Columbia Premier David Eby said Wednesday human activity is to blame for Canada's worst wildfire season on record.
Oh, I think that without a doubt, the ferocity of the fires, the extent of the burning, the historic nature of the forest fires we're seeing, not just here in British Columbia, but in Greece, in Nova Scotia, in the United States, it's just devastating fires that are clearly linked to human-caused climate change.
In Georgia, Rudy Giuliani surrendered to the Fulton County Jail Wednesday on charges he conspired to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss. Giuliani was released on $150,000 bond and told reporters he was, quote, very, very honored to be involved in this case, unquote. Two other lawyers and co-defendants in Trump's racketeering indictment also surrendered Wednesday. Sidney Powell, who peddled pro-Trump election conspiracy theories, and Kenneth Cheesebro, an architect of the fake electors plot. So far, 9 of the 19 co-defendants have turned themselves in. Trump is expected to surrender today. Republican presidential candidates faced off in their first debate Wednesday evening, but frontrunner Donald Trump refused to take part. During the debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all 8 participants declined to raise their hands when asked by Fox News moderator Martha McCallum if human activity was to blame for the climate crisis.
Do you believe in human behavior is causing climate change? Raise your hand if you do.
Well, look, we're not school children. Let's have the debate. I mean, I'm happy to take it to start. Okay. Alexander, so do you want to raise your hand or not? I don't think that's the way to do.
While Trump skipped the debate, he appeared instead in a pre-taped interview with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson that was posted on X minutes before the presidential primary debate started. In the interview, Trump predicted the U.S. will see more political violence and defended his supporters who attacked the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021.
People in that crowd said it was the most beautiful day they've ever experienced. There was love in that crowd. There was love and unity. I have never seen such spirit and such passion and such love.
After headlines, we'll air excerpts from the Republican primary debate and speak with national affairs correspondent John Nichols of The Nation magazine in Wisconsin. South Carolina's Supreme Court has upheld the state's six-week abortion ban, reversing its earlier decision that the ban was unconstitutional. The reversal came after South Carolina lawmakers replaced the only woman justice on the bench with a male judge following her retirement and passed a new version of the ban. South Carolina is the only state to have an all-male state Supreme Court. It previously allowed abortions until 22 weeks of pregnancy. At least 22 states have banned or rolled back abortion rights since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last summer. Politico is reporting Washington, D.C. Attorney General Brian Schwab has launched an investigation into right-wing judicial activists and Federalist Society co-chair Leonard Leo and his network of nonprofits. Earlier this year, Politico reported one of Leo's registered charities paid his for-profit public relations company at least $43 million. The charity, which recently relocated from Virginia to Texas, is called the 85 Fund and received $117 million in anonymous funding in 2021. The nonprofit is run by Carrie Severino, a former clerk for Justice Clarence Thomas. Leonard Leo is widely known as Donald Trump's court whisperer and was involved in the selection of all three of former President Trump's far-right Supreme Court justices. It's not the first time Leo and his dark money network have come under scrutiny. Leo was the recipient of likely the largest ever political donation in the United States when he received $1.6 billion from conservative billionaire Barry Side in 2021. The watchdog Campaign for Accountability says some $73 million has been moved from nonprofits connected to Leo to his for-profit firms since 2016. And India has become the fourth nation to achieve a moon landing. On Wednesday, India's robotic Chandrayaan-3 lander touched down near the moon's south pole, an unexplored terrain that's believed to hold vast amounts of water ice, which could one day be separated into fuel and air by lunar astronauts. India's United Nations ambassador, Ruchira Kamboj, said the landing was a milestone for scientists in the global south.
This achievement not only marks India's presence on the moon, but also symbolizes the aspirations of 1.4 billion Indians. Beyond that, it's a historic moment for humanity as we venture into uncharted territory near the moon's south pole.
India's successful landing came just days after Russia's Luna 25 spacecraft crashed while attempting to land at another site near the moon's south pole. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, the head of the Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has apparently died in a plane crash in Russia 2 months after he led a failed mutiny against Putin. Stay with us.
If you're selling your soul, working all day, overtime hours for pay, well, nothing's gonna change if all you do is wish you could wake up and it not be true. Join a union, fight for better pay. You better join a union, brother. Organize today, you'll see where the problem really lies when the union comes around. Rich men earning north of a million wanna keep the working folk down. Wanna keep the working folk down. If you form a union, you'll soon find that working people are all of one kind. So we ain't gonna punch down on those who need a bit of understanding and some solidarity. That ain't right, friend. If you're struggling with your health and you're putting on the pounds, doctor gives you opiates to help you get around. Well, wouldn't it be better for folks like you and me if medicine was subsidized and healthcare was free? Join a union.
Rich Men Earning North of a Million by Billy Bragg. Bragg released this song in response to Oliver Anthony's song, Rich Men North of Richmond, which has become a viral right-wing anthem and was referenced at last night's Republican presidential debate. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. 2 months to the day after the private Russian mercenary group, Wagner, staged a failed mutiny, the group's head, Yevgeny Prigozhin, was apparently killed in a plane crash north of Moscow shortly after 6 p.m. local time Wednesday. Eyewitness videos posted online show the plane was missing a wing as it spiraled to the ground. The official passenger list said several other senior Wagner members were on board, including Dmitry Utkin, a mercenary commander who allegedly founded the Wagner Group in 2014. Also on board was Yevgeny Makaryan, who fought with the mercenary group in Syria, and longtime Prigozhin ally Valery Chigalov, who was in charge of his business empire, including his oil investments in Syria. Last month, the United States imposed sanctions on Chigalov for facilitating shipments of weapons to Russia. The crash sparked widespread speculation that Prigozhin and other Wagner leaders were assassinated for leading a failed mutiny in June that saw heavily armed mercenaries advance to within 120 miles of Moscow. Adding to the speculation, Russian media reported Wednesday, the Kremlin has fired senior Russian General Sergei Surovikin as Air Force Chief. The general was known as an ally of the Wagner Group and had not been seen in public since the mutiny.
Just 3 days ago, Prigozhin posted one of his first online videos since leading the failed uprising. He appeared to be somewhere in Africa and spoke with a rifle in his hands with other armed men behind him.
Работаем. Температура плюс 50.
We are working. The temperature is 50 plus degrees Celsius. Everything as we like. Wagner PMC conducts reconnaissance and search actions, makes Russia even greater on all continents, and Africa more free. Justice and happiness for the African people. We're making life a nightmare for ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other bandits.
Since Prigozhin was killed Wednesday, there's been no official comment from the Kremlin or defense ministry. Russian President Vladimir Putin gave a speech about an hour after the plane crash, but he made no reference to it. Putin later addressed the BRICS summit remotely and again did not mention the crash. This was President Biden's response when asked to comment on the crash and the death of Prigozhin by reporters.
I don't know for a fact what happened, but I'm not surprised.
Do you believe?
There's not much that happens in Russia with Putin not behind. I don't know enough to know the answer. I've been working out for the last hour and a half.
For more, we're joined by Kimberly Martin, professor of political science at Barnard College, Columbia University. She's been researching and writing about the Wagner Group for years. Professor, welcome back to Democracy Now! First, your first response yesterday, it was like close to 1:30 in the afternoon when we heard Eastern time that Prigozhin possibly was dead.
Not unexpected at all. We know that Putin takes revenge on people who are disloyal. It was 2 months to the day after Prigozhin began his mutiny. And it's fitting that it happened on an airplane, given that as part of that mutiny, Prigozhin's men ended up shooting down a series of Russian military helicopters in an airplane and killed 13 people.
And Professor Martin, can you say, talk about the other senior Wagner leaders who were apparently on this plane with Prigozhin?
Yeah, probably the most significant one is Chekalov, who, as you mentioned earlier, was in charge of the Evropolis business part of Prigozhin's holdings. Prigozhin has many, many holdings in many, many very hidden places around the world. But Chekalov was associated with those in Syria. And that is significant because it appeared that the Wagner personnel in Syria had already been taken away from Wagner command immediately after the mutiny. We know that the Russian military personnel on the ground, uniformed military on the ground in Syria, had worked with Syrian authorities to either send Wagner people home who did not wish to sign new contracts, or had the rest sign contracts with somebody else in Syria. It could have been either the Russian uniformed military or an alternative group called Redoubt that has been performing similar activities in guarding oil and gas facilities for Russia in Syria. So getting Chekalov out of the way was probably also a mechanism to take over those business holdings much more easily. On Utkin, there had actually been rumors that Utkin was killed many years ago. He had not been seen publicly in several years, except for this very odd video that came out in July under very low light that was filmed at the Wagner New Camp in Belarus. And there had been some speculation that maybe that wasn't really Utkin, and that maybe the reason it was filmed in such low light was to try to hide somebody who was playing the part of Utkin. But nonetheless, this is essentially a statement by the Russian state that these people have been now out of the way. Whatever really happened to them, we may never know if they were really killed or just given another identity and sent off to some island somewhere. But in any case, it appears that these people are no longer significant actors in Russia.
Professor Martin, you mentioned Redoubt, which is reportedly another paramilitary group, except this one is headed by Russia's defense minister, Sergei Shoigu.
It's not clear that Shoigu actually heads it. It has a much closer relationship with the defense ministry than certainly Prigozhin's group has had. It got along very well with the defense ministry. And in many ways, it's not going to really be an easy substitute for Wagner because it does not have Wagner's battle experience. In Syria, what it was primarily involved in is guarding oil and gas facilities that are associated with a different Russian oligarch, Timchenko, somebody who's actually much, much closer to Putin than Prigozhin ever was. And so in Syria, it would be very easy for them to take over the kinds of duties that Prigozhin's forces were carrying out more recently. Very early on in Syria, in Russia's military involvement in Syria, Prigozhin's forces were engaged in full battle. We know that in 2020, they also recruited former Syrian opposition folks to go fight in Libya on behalf of Prigozhin's activities in Libya for the warlord Khalifa Haftar. And Redoubt has done nothing like that, to our knowledge. But in Syria, it would be easy for Redoubt to take over the forces. It appears that in recent weeks, Redoubt has been trying to compete against Wagner to recruit people for Africa as well. But given that the tasks that Wagner has been fulfilling in Africa are significantly different from just guarding facilities, in the Central African Republic, they have been guarding the leadership that are threatened by rebels, the President Ouattara's leadership. They have been engaged in a lot of real battles with those rebels. In Mali, certainly they're fulfilling similar duties. In Sudan, not merely are they guarding facilities, but they are smuggling gold out of Sudan to the United Arab Emirates for melting down and then sale of the cash back to Moscow. And in Libya, they've been working with Khalifa Haftar. And I think it would be difficult for Redoubt to take those over anytime soon. But I think it's entirely possible that some version of Wagner will continue operating in Africa even without Prigozhin. I don't think they needed Prigozhin for those activities with the local commanders on the ground to continue.
The video we just showed of Prigozhin, supposedly the last time he was seen somewhere in Africa, people speculated it was in Mali. If you can talk about that, he was also seen on the outskirts of the Africa summit that Putin held in St. Petersburg. And also, do you believe he's dead? I mean, Prigozhin obviously is famous for using body doubles, but there's no—we just know there was a crash.
So, complicated questions. On the images, many of them have not been verified in terms of timestamp and geolocation. The video that was taken of him that appeared to be in Mali, his airplane flew from Mali to Moscow. And so the supposition is that it took place in Mali. But the background was essentially savannah. And it, you know, could have been a TV set for all we know. And so it's very hard to verify any of those videos or any of those photographs. We do know for sure that the Russian state has announced that somebody with Prigozhin's name has been killed. We know that Prigozhin's media channels are announcing that he has been killed at a building that was formerly associated with him in St. Petersburg before the mutiny. There were lights on the building last night in the shape of a cross, indicating that people who were working for him wanted to give the impression that he's killed. So whether he's dead or not, he is certainly dead in his future in Russian politics. But yes, it did appear that he was flying back and forth between the new Wagner base camp in the middle of Belarus, back and forth, both to Moscow and to St. Petersburg, participating in the summit that Putin held with African leaders in July, and then that he probably also was in Mali a couple of days ago before flying back to Moscow.
And Professor Martin, very soon after reports of his death emerged, there were numerous Telegram channels that were warning of Wagner taking revenge. And some Russian security forces were reportedly put on high alert. So are you expecting anything to happen?
You know, something might happen, but it's not clear how it could possibly be successful. So in a sense, it makes sense that Putin waited 2 months to take revenge, if that's actually what happened, because those the mutineers are no longer located on Russian territory. Part of the so-called deal that was reached with Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, was to put them on Belarusian territory, and they are in the middle of Belarus. They are in an area that is a rural area without any big cities nearby, in the exact center of the country. And so if those people were to plan anything, it would be fairly easy to contain them in Belarus without allowing them back into Russia by Russian military and security forces. The other thing to keep in mind is that the people engaged in the mutiny were the people who earlier in the month of May had been fighting in Bakhmut in Ukraine, in eastern Ukraine. And those were primarily prisoners that Prigozhin had released from Russian prisons with the deal that they would have their sentences commuted if they were willing to fight for Wagner for a certain number of months. And what that means is that they may have been very loyal to Prigozhin because Prigozhin arranged this for them, but they were not the kind of fighters that we associate with what Wagner has done in Africa in particular. They were not sophisticated military people. They were former prisoners who were doing this to get out of jail free. And certainly they had battle experience in Bakhmut, but they're not particularly well trained. And also, as part of that deal that moved the forces to Belarus, Wagner gave up its heavy weaponry that it had had in Ukraine. And so that means that they're armed just with, you know, probably Kalashnikovs and things that are similar to that. So again, they would be very easy to contain. The other Wagner forces are in Syria and in several places in Africa, as we mentioned earlier, the Central African Republic, Mali, Libya, and Sudan. The only way that they could get back to Russia is by taking Russian military airplanes, which go through the Khmeimim air base that Russia now controls in Syria. And so unless they had support from Russian uniformed military forces, they have no way of getting back to Russia. So there may be a few people in Russia who had been engaged in Wagner, who have recently retired or were, quote unquote, on vacation, who might try something. But it's a very small group of people. They are not heavily armed, and it's most likely not the best trained members of Wagner. And so I think that probably Putin is pretty safe from any kind of an uprising by Wagner folks per se. The one question we have is how the Russian military feels about this. And there had been some indication, as your reporting indicated, Suravikin has been detained. We haven't seen him publicly since the mutiny. He had been identified by Prigozhin as his go-between with the defense ministry. He had been in charge of Russia's air and space forces, and he was relieved of those duties. We don't know how many people in the Russian military actually supported Prigozhin and what this effect might now have within the Russian military forces. But I would say that so far we haven't seen anything happening indicating that there would be any kind of additional mutiny.
Let's end with Yale historian Timothy Snyder, who's written extensively about Russia, posting Wednesday, "So the Russian officer Gherkin, who started the Donbas War in 2014, is in jail, the only Russian general to carry out a successful maneuver in 2022. Surovikin has been relieved of duty, and the only Russian commander to take a city in 2022.